My guest is composer John Morris. He's written the music for all of Mel Brooks's films. In each film, Morris has parodied a different genre of music. He spoofed Broadway musicals in The Producers, westerns in Blazing Saddles, suspense in High Anxiety, horror in Young Frankenstein, and biblical epics in The History of the World Part 1. Morris has also written the scores for more serious films, like The Elephant Man, for which he received an Academy Award nomination. He began his musical career with the intentions of becoming a concert pianist, but early on he turned to composing and arranging for Broadway musicals. He's done 27 musicals. The last was Mac and Mabel. Morris won 3 Emmys for his television work. His TV work includes The Tap Dance Kid and The Addams Chronicles. His latest movie is another collaboration with Mel Brooks. This one is a spoof of the Star Wars sagas. It's titled Spaceballs, and Spaceballs opens nationally on June 24th. John Morris, welcome to Fresh Air.
Thank you.
I want to mention we're going to be hearing a wide variety of the music you've written as we proceed through today's program. Let's start with the first song that you wrote with Mel Brooks, a song called Springtime for Hitler, which I think it's fair to say is one of the most tasteless songs ever written.
That was the entire intention. Mel came to me and he said, this is the lyric. I want you to make the worst dance arrangement that has ever been heard on Broadway. And Alan Johnson and I collaborated on putting this horrible number on the stage.
It's a big musical production number, Springtime for Hitler.
The worse it is, the better it is, because we were doing just that. When I first read the lyric, I couldn't believe my eyes.
What was most weird thing to you about the lyric?
Deutschland is happy and gay. I mean, it's insane.
And the idea behind the musical, the idea behind The Producers, the movie that this was written for, was to produce a movie, a musical so bad that it would have
to fail. Right. And the number was to be the peak of the musical.
Did you have any reservations about writing this number?
Yes. I said to my wife, I don't know whether I should put my name on this picture. And that's the absolute truth, because I thought it might be so terrible. But one gets to trust Mel after a while. His extravagance, he's always very true to his ideas and has been. He always does exactly what he intends. And is responsible for exactly what he intends to do. So I knew it would be all right.
Let's listen to Springtime for Hitler, and then we'll talk about some of the musical conventions of Broadway that you brought into this song. And this is Springtime for Hitler, orchestrated by my guest, composer John Morris.
Germany was having trouble, what a sad, sad story. Needed a new leader to restore its former glory.
Where could that man be?
We looked around and then we found the man for you and me. And now it's
springtime for Hitler and Germany. Deutschland is happy and gay.
We're marching to face. Look out, here comes the master race.
Springtime for Hitler and Germany.
Winter for Poland and France.
Springtime for Hitler and Germany.
Come on, Germany.
Born in Dusseldorf, and that is why they call me Rolf.
Don't be stupid, be a smarty. Come and join the Nazi party.
Thank you.
Springtime for Hitler from the film The Producers, a film by Mel Brooks. My guest composer, John Morris, orchestrated that number that we just heard.
That is really shameless, isn't it? You know who the principal vocalist is? The tenor, Artie Rubin, who is now general manager for the Nederlander organization. And he's a big, big businessman in the New York theater now, and a great singer.
You know what I'm wondering? You had done a lot of work on Broadway at the time that you were writing this.
Yes.
And you parody so many Broadway musical conventions in the number that we just heard.
I know them all.
I wonder if your fellow composers were almost, if they laughed along with you or if they were a little insulted by it.
No, I don't think so. No, why? It's Julie Stein. It's everybody.
It's everybody, yeah.
Sure.
Let's talk about some of the conventions that you parodied in there.
Sure.
Key changes, tempo changes.
Everything. Every arranging trick. The arranger discovers the secret of arranging is to save. You save everything. You start small. You add instruments. You add voices. You do tempo changes. You do key changes. It's all of that. That's what an arranger learns.
Now, it must have taken a lot of courage to do this, partly because it's such a funny spoof about Broadway, but also because for people who don't get the joke, it would be very offensive to do a big musical comedy number about Hitler.
When, this is a true story, Mel and I screened the film in a screening room in New York for Joe Levine, the producer, and Mel was very nervous. Joe Levine never laughed once. And the picture opened to fairly good reviews and then over the years became a classic. But I don't think it made its money back on the first run, which is frightening for a filmmaker. So, but Joe Levine never laughed.
Did he like it though?
I don't know. He never laughed though, which is the way a person shows an appreciation for a comedy, you know?
I have to ask you this because you work with Mel Brooks. Are you Jewish?
No.
Does he have to tell you all the Jewish in-jokes in his lyrics and in the stories?
No, I know most of the words.
You know?
Sure, sure. It's an accident of birth. I'm not, though.
How did you two start working together?
We were called in to doctor a show called Eartha Kitt, Shinbone Alley. He was doctoring the book and I was doctoring the music. And we met in these dingy hotel rooms late at night and tried to bring some life into this Archie and Mehitable show. It was impossible, but that's where we met.
So you were both doctoring this play together?
Doctoring and play together.
What made you realize you'd hit it off together?
We just liked each other tremendously. And I understand him and he understands me. He loves music, you know. In The Producers, for instance, the fountain sequence, when they go around the fountain, it's a natural idea to have a big piece of musical elevation. And when we were mixing it, he said, take the fountain down and bring the music up because he knows that's where all the emotion is. So,
how do you work together? Do the lyrics come first? Sammy Conaway says the phone call comes first. So I always hesitate to ask this question.
I don't know. I was trying to remember Blazing Saddles. I know there was a piano in the outer office. I know we would go to the piano and he would say, what do you think of this? And I'd say, what do you think of this? And before we knew it, there was a song. And I don't know really when it happened, because the next day we played it for his wife, Anne Bancroft, and she said, it's wonderful. So I don't know when it happened, but these creative accidents are very frightening, because you hope you'll always come up with a thing that is necessary.
I want to play the theme that you wrote for Blazing Saddles.
Sure.
And this is a spoof of Westerns.
Right.
And before we hear it, what did you have in mind? What particular songs or movies did you have in mind when you wrote this theme?
It's none of them. It's the harmonic Western language is all it is. It's a perfectly good song.
It's great song. You know, that's the thing.
It's just the harmonics of the Western song. The whips are my wife's idea.
Oh, they're perfect.
And
we'll hear in a second.
Sure.
There's whips in it. Now, I have to ask you, you got Frankie Lane to sing the song.
Yes.
And he recorded High Noon, the theme from High Noon.
Right.
He also recorded the theme from Rawhide, which has whips in it, like this song.
Well, that I didn't know. I didn't know about Rawhide.
Was he offended or delighted
it.
When you approached
he
him to do a
it.
Parody of himself?
No, he loved it.
He loved it.
He loved it.
Okay, let's hear the song that he loved recording. This is Blazing Saddles with lyrics by Mel Brooks, music by my guest John Morris.
Thank you. star. His job to offer battle to bad men near and far. He conquered fear and he conquered hate. He turned dark night into day. He made his blazing saddle a torch to light the way. When outlaws rule the West and fear filled the land, a cry went up for a man with guts to take the West in hand. They needed a man who was brave and true, with justice for all as his aim. Then out of the sun rode a man with a gun, and Barton was his name. Yes, Bart was his name. He rode a blazing saddle.
It's an excerpt from the theme for the Mel Brooks comedy Blazing Saddles. The music was written and orchestrated by my guest, John Morris, who has done the music for all of Mel Brooks's films. Now, I would hold that song up against all of the Frankie Lane Western songs and say, if you were listening to it straight, if you weren't thinking of it as a comedy, it would be as good as all of the straight ones. Yeah.
It is a straight song. It only happened to be written 10 years later.
That's right.
Mel, I just remembered, Mel always wanted to call Blazing Saddles Black Bart. That was his title for the picture. Month after month, he insisted that it be called Black Bart, and the studio loved Blazing Saddles. I don't know how anybody could have been so wrong, but he really would not accept it until the last minute.
Do you have to really love the kind of music that you're parodying when you write music with Mel Brooks? Love
sure.
The genre.
Yeah. I am emotional. That's the kind of composer I am. And if there are good things in every form, you have to find where the heart of it is and then go from the emotion. I mean, all these songs are emotional. They're not they have something in their own right. I hate flat tunes that don't have any inner life. I love great harmonization of something. I love what they call in music suspensions, in which something travels around inside a chord.
I bet you also have an affection for flamboyantly bad music.
For instance, what's flamboyantly bad?
Well, certain game show themes, certain really bad musicals. I bet you... Even a certain affection for Muzak, maybe, just for all
what
the
is,
corny
yes,
things
yes,
that they do to good
true.
Music.
Absolutely true. Yeah.
Do you listen to it so that you get ideas for parodies?
No. I mean, I deal with music all the time, so I don't know what I'm dealing with.
Okay. My guest is John Morris, and we're going to take a short break here, and then we'll be back to talk more about John Morris's composing for the screen. This is Fresh Air. Composer John Morris is my guest. He's written the music for all of Mel Brooks's films, including The Producers, Blazing Saddles, High Anxiety, and The History of the World Part 1. Their new collaboration is a Star Wars takeoff titled Spaceballs, and that premieres nationally on June 24th. And in a few minutes, we'll hear a preview of the music from that movie. We've been talking about the parodies that you've written, but you've written a lot of serious music. And it's interesting that both you and Mel Brooks have this serious side, which a lot of people don't know about.
In the East, I'm known as a serious composer. I do Shakespeare's chorus, a lot of things for PBS, The Adams Chronicles. In the West, I'm known as a comedy composer. Never the twain shall meet. There's nothing I can do. Elephant Man, when I was nominated for an Academy Award, my phone didn't ring for about 16 months. After the nomination, my agent never called me. I think somehow he thought I had betrayed him by doing Elephant Man. It's absolutely the truth.
Because it was serious?
I don't know. I mean, but I did a very serious film, which got nominated, and then everything went quiet. You know, when the phone doesn't ring, you know you're in terrible trouble.
Would you consider your parody music any less important than your serious music?
No, it's all the same. It's all the same. I mean, it takes the same amount of attention, same amount of care. Sure.
I consider film music to be some of the most important orchestral music of the 20th century, and I think that's probably... you agree.
Absolutely. When they review the music of, say, the 30s to the 90s of our time, they're going to find that a lot of the inspiration, genuine inspiration, comes from film music. Alfred Newman, John Williams, I mean, all the good, wonderful symphonic fellows.
Bernard Herrmann,
sure.
But do you find that a lot of people don't take movie music as seriously as they take music that's made for concert hall performances?
Yeah, it doesn't make a bit of difference because it will go into the repertory. It will just enter. You never can kill a good piece of music. You can't do it. So it will enter the repertory. People won't want to hear it again, and they will.
I want to play some of the music you wrote for The Elephant Man, which is, we're going to hear a scene that's the nightmare scene, the music that you wrote for that. Would you describe where this fits into the movie, and then we'll listen to the music?
They enter the Elephant Man's room.
We should maybe just describe who the Elephant Man is.
The Elephant Man is a badly disfigured human being. I forget the name of his disease, but it's rampant fleshly growth is what it is. He's very ugly. And these people come to the room to torment him, to show him off to the local girls. They're all half drunk, and they dance with him and torment him. And this is what I call the nightmare.
Let's hear it. It's a really chilling piece of music.
Yeah, it was. I was just remembering how it took me about, in doing a film score, you always try to arrive at the emotional heart of the film. And it took me a long time, about 3 weeks, to arrive at the kind of music I thought Elephant Man should have. I knew it should be very simple, have a slightly circusy overtone, very legitimate, you know. But it took me a long time because you go to bed with the problem and you wake up with the problem and then you feel the steel ball in your stomach and you go to bed with the problem and you wake up with the problem and you say, will it never come? Oh, please, will it? Please give me that. Finally it comes. But it took a long time, Elephant Man.
That music is almost like the nightmare side of circus music.
That's right.
Let's talk about how you score for what's happening visually in a movie. The sequence that we just heard is probably a good example of that. This had to work with everybody breaking into the room and tormenting the Elephant Man. Did you see the footage before you scored the music?
I have to explain a little bit about my working method. I memorize the film, the entire film from beginning to end. I know it as well as the director does, because then it begins to take on a life of its own. You really understand the sequences. For instance, this nightmare scene. I discovered it was a ballet. They were talking, but what they were saying had no importance at all. So I decided to just cover it up and score it as I would a ballet. And that was the heart of it. But you can't get that information from reading descriptions. You can't get it from the script. You can't get it from descriptions of what happens when and in how many seconds. You have to get it from the film itself. That's my working method.
So you watch the footage over and over,
over and
again?
Over until I memorize it. I memorize the film, literally. I know it as well as the director does.
How much do you talk to the director before composing?
Oh, a lot. A lot. There's something formally called a spotting session in which you discuss where the music is to occur in the film. And then you go off and do your work. And you may find there are better places or not so good. But
the director of Elephant Man was David Lynch.
Who
also directed
Wonderful
Blue
director.
Velvet.
Wonderful director.
So you'd play him fragments?
I play him everything. But it was all finished by the time I had played it for him.
What happens if it's not synchronizing quite right? Do you ever have to speed up the tempo or take it down to synchronize? And do you conduct it while you watch the movie?
Yeah.
What's sure. that experience like?
It's fun. It's fun. No, of course, part of my technique as a professional is to make it fit perfectly, which every good film composer does that, because they edit the film. They take out little hunks, so you have to make it work. Mel was editing Spaceballs right up to the final mix.
Spaceballs is the new movie that with Mel Brooks that's going to come out on June 24th nationally.
I think it's 26th. I'm not sure.
Oh, okay.
Could be. Could be the 24th.
Okay. None of us have seen the movie yet. What? It's a spoof of the Star Wars saga?
Yes. Little Star Wars, Little Wizard of Oz, Little Jedi. It's Mel's view of the space cliches of spaceships and little guys and good guys and bad guys and the space adventure film.
What did he tell you he wanted musically?
Star Wars. I mean, I always do my own thing. I can't do Star Wars, but he said this is what this movie is about. Star Wars was a big symphonic. I happen to admire the Star Wars score very, very much, but it's a big symphonic explosion, is what it is. So that's what I did.
Well, you've wrote a test pressing.
Yes, it is a test pressing.
So we're going to sample. What are we going to hear? The overture?
Main title.
Main title. Yeah. Overtures for Broadway.
Yeah. Same thing.
So this is the main title from the new movie
Spaceballs. Right.
Pull out all the stops on that one.
The laser flashes. We have to let the audience know what it's in for. That's the obligation of a main title. The range of the movie, the fun of the movie. That's why those laser flashes are there.
Has John Williams, who wrote all the Star Wars scores, heard this one yet?
No. He'll like it. It's a perfectly legitimate piece of English bombast is what it is. You know that. And he wrote a lot of that stuff.
Do you think that soundtracks are changing now, that movie music is changing? And here's what I'm thinking, that a lot of soundtracks now have synthesizer accompaniment, or they have rock hits from the past that are packaged together in anthologies that sell as well as the movie does.
Yeah.
Is that affecting work for movie composers?
Yeah. You understand that the films are slated for the 12 to 17 years old, to 17-year-olds. So you have to provide something for them. However, the synthesizer score to me is when it's done with the there's tons of synthesizer in Elephant Man, tons of it, but you don't hear it. I mean, it's all when it's a synthesizer score, it's very boring, in my humble opinion, because everything is flat. It's the big Wurlitzer organ gone berserk. And the rock score, I have nothing against rock scores. I like rock songs myself, but it's for the kids. That's who it's for.
So,
and in a few years, it's going to be embarrassing because that material is going to be so dated, and then you're going to come back and look at the film in 8 years and say, oh my, what were we doing?
One more thing before we're out of time. What's your next project after Spaceballs?
They're talking to me about it. I have a number of my own projects. Where I have written an opera, a television opera called Stefan, which I want to get on. I've written a show with N. Richard Nash, which I want to get on. I mean, and I'll do some art songs for myself this summer. But movies, I don't know about yet.
Well, it's really been a pleasure to meet you. I love your music, and it's been a pleasure to listen to it and to meet you today. Thank you very much for joining us today. My guest has been composer John Morris, and he's written music for all of the Mel Brooks films and also wrote the music for The Elephant Man, which got him an Academy Award nomination. And their latest collaboration is titled Spaceballs. That's a takeoff on the Star Wars sagas. Spaceballs is scheduled to open June 24th or June 26th.
26th.
It's one or the other. This is Fresh Air.